Hi all, Amber here. You know me as a podcast host and researcher, but I also do a fair bit of editing. A few years ago, I edited a riveting investigation spearheaded by fellow Pulitzer Prize winner Maggie Freeling, who when I was editing was reporting this case out in real time. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, Maggie is releasing a creator's cut of that investigation, one that reflects what she learned along the way and what didn't sit right once the reporting was done. The case begins on April Fool's Day 1999, when 26-year-old Yvonne Lane was found murdered in her Alliance, Ohio home. Her ex-boyfriend, David Thorne, became the focus of the investigation. Another man confessed to the killing, but claimed David paid him to do it. David was sentenced to life without parole. What unfolds here is not a typical wrongful conviction story. It questions the investigation, the advocates, and even the role journalists play when we believe we're on the right side. Truly, this was a wild case from start to finish, and I'm so proud of the work Maggie did on it and grateful that I got to play a part. You're about to hear a portion of the first episode. New episodes of The Burden, Death, and Deceit in Alliance drop weekly. If you like what you hear, subscribe to The Burden, Death, and Deceit in Alliance wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today, we have a special preview of Death and Deceit in Alliance, Episode 1. To hear the podcast in its entirety, go to Death and Deceit in Alliance in the feed of the show, The Burden.
Today, dated July 14th, 1999, Wednesday, it's 1309 hours. My name is Detective Bud Sampson. We're in the Ravenna Police Department interview room. Along with me is Detective William Mucklow and Detective John Leach of the Alliance Police Department. Also in the room is Joseph Isaac Wilkes. Okay, we're investigating the homicide of Yvonne Lane. Can you tell us your part in this?
The tape you're listening to is Joe Wilkes, a 19-year-old boy confessing to murder.
She was like, hey, what are you doing here? She goes, I haven't seen you in a long time. I was like, oh, David just wanted me to stop by and see how things were. And then we're sitting there talking for about 3 to 5 minutes, and then I did it.
Okay. I know this is going to be hard, but we got to go through and you tell me what happened here. Where were you sitting? Were you sitting upstairs or downstairs?
We were on the second floor, not the third one.
Okay.
And we were sitting on the couch talking, and I was still very happy. Come on.
Okay, did she get up and try to run?
No, she tried to run out the door.
What door did she try to run out?
The big glass door, the slide. And then...
Fucking take anything.
But she was blind. I saw the same thought in the cell. But she saw the door and walked out by it.
Joe just said, David told me to. David as in David Thorne. On April 1st, 1999, 26-year-old Yvonne Lane was found with her throat slashed, dead in her home in Alliance, Ohio.
26-year-old Yvonne Lane, a beautiful, vivacious woman, found in a pool of her own blood. Her throat slashed while her children slept.
She was discovered by her mother, who had arrived to take her 6-year-old grandchild to kindergarten. Yvonne was a mother to 5 kids. David Thorne was the father of one of the children, although he and Yvonne were not together anymore.
The murder of a mother of 5 in her own home stunned the small town of Alliance, Ohio.
David had recently been ordered to pay child support, $351 a month. And Joe said in his confession that he was hired by David Thorne to kill Yvonne so he didn't have to pay and so he could have his son to himself.
The father of one of the children. The motive? Child support. Thorne was ordered to pay.
To the untrained listener, at one point, myself too, this seems like a pretty clear-cut case. Someone confessing, and someone with a motive. But when you start digging, going through documents and talking to people, the more complicated things get. And it seems like just about everyone around Yvonne also had a motive to kill her. This is Death and Deceit in Alliance, a real-time investigation into whether David Thorne killed Yvonne Lane. I'm Maggie Freeling. The murder of Yvonne Lane and David Thorne's claims of innocence were never the feature of a Netflix film or made-for-TV series. But it wasn't a blip on the radar either. Journalists were drawn to it for years.
The attack grabbed headlines as police hunted for a killer.
Like investigative journalist Dwayne Pullman, who you also heard in the previous clips, Dwayne looked into David's claims for 3 years. However, that was over a decade ago. And since then, former prosecutors, private investigators, sleuths, and the like have all looked into David's claim of innocence. Yet, the question still remains.
Did the system convict the wrong man?
So here we are. Since Yvonne's murder, David has continually said he had no involvement. He says he never paid Joe Wilkes or anyone to murder his ex-girlfriend and the mother of his child. When you make it to David's official website, wcodt.org, you discover that this was an incredibly brutal murder. Yvonne Lane's throat was slit to the spine, almost decapitating her. Blood was all over the house.
She begins to spurt blood, pumping blood violently out of her neck.
The living room where her body was found looks like someone took buckets of blood and threw it around the room. It just didn't look like a hit or a random murder to me. This looked personal. Police had to process this absolute mess of a room, which I'm sure was not easy, especially because they also had to get 4 of her kids out of the house because all but one of her children were home when she was killed, but they were too young to be helpful to the police. That is, except for one of them, a 4-year-old who'd play a part in the investigation. The police say they tried to get the kids through the crime scene without seeing their mother's body. So some flubs may be understandable if they're focusing on the boys, but not to the extent that happened here. Part of the problem may just be inexperience. Murders in Alliance are rare. A bad year might see 2 homicides, but most, the city saw just 1, if any. I feel confident saying at minimum, they were not ready to deal with this particular homicide. Police say they covered Yvonne's body with a blanket from one of the bedrooms, potentially contaminating any evidence on her. As every watcher of CSI knows, this probably wasn't best practice. No one wore shoe coverings or gloves to preserve evidence, and investigators went back and forth, stepping over Yvonne's body when crossing the room. A bloody footprint between her legs apparently came from a detective, not the killer. And the chief even brought a woman, a civilian, into the crime scene. It was an absolute disaster. Evidence was collected from the scene and never tested, and the evidence that was didn't match David or Joe. Yet, the case still made it to trial. And that's thanks to Joe's confession, the one you heard part of at the top of the episode. The prosecutor said that David hired Joe to kill Yvonne. And as you heard, that's the story that Joe told. He said David gave him $300 to kill Yvonne. After his confession, Joe took the police to the alleged murder weapon, a 3-inch pocket knife that he said he tossed in a storm drain. He also showed them where he disposed of the pants he allegedly wore when he killed Yvonne. Another key element of the state's case, a witness who said she saw Joe the night of the murder. Rose Moore said Joe told her and her boyfriend that he was on his way to kill someone. We'll come back to this later, but I just want to point out that in this version, the prosecution's version, this 19-year-old was so excited about an evening out with his knife to kill someone that he wanted even strangers to know about it. If true, Joe's boast is pretty damning, but it's worth noting that there was no physical evidence linking even Joe to the scene. No fingerprints, no shoe prints, or DNA. The pants Joe allegedly wore when he killed Yvonne, there was no blood on them, much less anything linking David to the crime. Sure, Joe took cops to a knife, but there's no evidence linking that knife to the murder. In fact, the prosecution will rest on witness testimony alone. But some witnesses were never called. And here's a key one. Keep him in mind, a neighbor who saw a man leaving Yvonne's house in the morning after her murder. He told cops that man was not David or Joe.
I was not asked to testify in the trial of David Thorne. I was shown a photo of David Thorne in December of 2000. It was not the man I saw leaving the residence in 916 Yvonne. I was shown a photo of Joseph Wilkes, the confessed murderer, in December of 2000. It was not the man I saw leaving the residence in 916 Yvonne.
But the jury never heard this. And after deliberating just 3 hours, David was convicted of paying Joe Wilkes $300 to murder Yvonne Lane. He was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Joe took a plea deal of 30 to life for his cooperation. He could be out of prison very soon.
It didn't take a jury long to convict David Thorne. Wilkes pleaded guilty. Both are now serving life sentences.
The entire conviction of David Thorne rests on Joe's testimony. But was Joe telling the truth? And if he was lying, why? He lost almost as much as David did. But I'm skeptical. Hiring a hitman to kill your ex over $351 a month seems like more risk than it's worth. Sure, back then the amount was more like $600 in today's dollars, and that might feel like a lot of money to fork over monthly if you're working at an hourly job, which David was. But David was making decent money at a high-end car shop. And compared to the motives of other folks, to me, David's alleged motive appears weak. Evidence uncovered in later investigations pointed to other potential killers, like any one of the men who fathered Yvonne's 4 other kids, or even members of law enforcement Yvonne was reported to be sleeping with, or the man seen leaving her house after she's presumed dead. Journalist Dwayne Pullman was equally as intrigued.
This case is filled with sex, secrets, and surprises.
And things only got more complicated when I talked to David.
All right, you there?
Yep. You hear me?
I can hear you. It's a little loud, but that's fine.
Okay.
So how are you doing today?
Not too bad.
When I first spoke to David, he had done 21 years, almost half of his life in prison, and there seemed to be no hope left.
Pretty much dead in the water. We need new evidence.
David didn't have a lawyer anymore. He ran out of money in all of his appeals. If David's going to get out of prison by proving his innocence, he needs a lawyer and investigator to find new evidence to show he deserves a new trial.
That's why we've been pushing so hard, is to find a private investigator that would kind of go ahead and kind of almost start the case anew.
And that's proven difficult to find. Investigators can cost thousands. And finding someone to take a case pro bono, that is, without pay, is not exactly easy.